Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. D.C. has the dubious distinction of having one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the nation. District mothers are twice as likely to die during pregnancy than the average American woman. Next week, however, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser is convening a summit to address those issues and others related to healthy expectant mothers and babies. Tonight, we are talking about that with Hyesuk Chung, D.C. Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services, and Dr. Laquandra Nesbitt, D.C. Health Director. We're talking about the health of our newborns, our infants, and expectant mothers. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Hyesuk and Dr. Nesbitt, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about the purpose of this event next week. It's why is the mayor doing this?
So I've been with the Bowser administration since Mayor Bowser came into office back in January 2015. And she's had a longstanding commitment during her time as a ANC commissioner, during her time as a council member to our families here in the District of Columbia. Back in 2015, we began to really have a new way of thinking about what it takes for our women and our children to be healthier in the District of Columbia. And we began back at that time working with our community partners, our healthcare providers to have a broader approach to improving, at that time, infant health. We were really focused a lot of our conversations around home visitation, and a lot of our efforts, our community conversation, was focused on home visitation as this panacea, so to speak, to reduce infant mortality. And what we knew then, and what we know now, is that it takes more than a home visit to improve the health of moms, to improve the health of babies, and that it requires that we improve the quality of care in our healthcare system. It requires that we have equitable access to high quality care. It requires that our women know what the access points are in our healthcare system, all of those things. And that it's not just the responsibility of government, but also our community-based organizations, our healthcare providers, our grassroots organizations, our social support system, etc. So we built out this new framework for what we call perinatal health, which is about moms and babies. Over the last couple of years, there's been an enhanced national focus on maternal health. And in particular, as you've mentioned at the top of the segment, the maternal mortality rate in the U.S. and even here in the District of Columbia. And we wanted to take this opportunity to really level set with our community, to get people to understand, when we're talking about maternal mortality, what does that mean? What are the things that we know can reduce maternal mortality, reduce infant mortality, eliminate the racial and ethnic disparities that we see in our community, and how can we elevate those best practices here in the District of Columbia, but also build a community of practice across cities that are similar to the District of Columbia across the U.S. And Mayor Bowser has shown tremendous leadership in that regard through the U.S. Conference of Mayors. The African American Mayors Association has led resolutions to call for a reduction in maternal mortality, and in particular, the reduction of health disparities that we see in this regard.
Let's be clear about what we're talking about. Maternal mortality, we're talking about mothers that die in childbirth.
Well, it's a little bit more expansive than that. So it's talking about women who die as a result of being pregnant, and a more specific definition is around within 42 days, being pregnant or within 42 days of having given birth. And that could be and specifically maternal mortality, when we're talking about the World Health Organization's definition, it's as related to the pregnancy itself. So we wouldn't be talking about a woman who is pregnant and dies in a car accident. So it is specific to having as a result of the pregnancy.
Why in 2018 in the most powerful city in the world, one could argue, is that still happening?
So when we look at the data, and I want to unpack this for people, because we get a lot of questions, and there's some alarm, and there should be some alarm around this issue, because you're absolutely right. In 2018, in a modern society, when we have technological advances, we have one of the highest insurance rates in the country. We have access to high quality care. Why would we have women who are dying as a result of being pregnant? One of the things that I want to clarify for the public is that when we talk about a maternal mortality rate of 31.5, is that that is a rate. It's a rate of 100,000 births, okay? Or there are people who are, these are women who have to be pregnant, right? And this occurs over a period of time. It's not a statistic that should be interpreted as if there are 31 women who die every single year in the District of Columbia. So that's one thing that I want all of our listeners to be very clear on. I also want people to understand that from our perspective, my perspective in particular as a physician, to have one woman die in the District of Columbia as a result of being pregnant is unacceptable in 2018. And we want to make sure that that does not happen. But when we look at the statistics on an annual basis, back in 2013, and if we look at a five-year period from 2012 to 2016, if we look at a five-year period, we had a peak of five deaths in 2013, and then we've seen a downward trend since then to 2016, with one death occurring in 2016. But even those calculations, because our population is so small, yields this maternal mortality rate of 31.5.
But even outside of the numbers, and I don't want to get too bogged down in the numbers, mm-hmm. because all of that is fine. But obviously, this is a serious enough issue where the mayor is going to convene this event, Maternal and Infant Health Summit. Mm-hmm. So the fact that this is an issue is enough for her to put it on the front burner.
Absolutely, because one death is too many. And we also recognize that even when deaths don't occur, people have complicated deliveries. Right? And we don't have the best birth outcomes. So we have babies who are born too soon. We still have an infant mortality rate that, while on the decline, the rate is still highest amongst black babies versus white babies. So we have some communities where we have babies who are not celebrating their first birthday. And we want those outcomes to improve. And we know that they can improve if we have more women who are getting into prenatal care, if we improve the overall health of our women, and that if we put some of the known and proven strategies that we know can work to produce preterm birth, if we actually put those strategies into play. And this isn't something that government can do all by itself. It requires that we have our healthcare providers, our community-based organizations and grassroots organizations, and our social support organizations who help our families with issues related to housing, education opportunities, employment opportunities, food security. Addressing all of those factors have to be done in concert and across all of these strategic partnerships in order to improve our health.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the Maternal and Infant Health Summit convened by D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. That's happening next week. But we are talking about the issues that are part of the foundation of this summit, about the health of our babies, the health of expectant mothers, and the like. If you have a question, if you have a comment, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Quickly, because I've got, there's so much to, as the doctor said, unpack with this. To me a little bit about what people can expect from this summit. I suspect this isn't just going to be a bunch of people people sitting around talking.
No, no, not at all. We're very much focused on actions and providing resources that are very concrete for families having babies in the district. And as Dr. Nesbitt said, you know, the mayor and this administration has been leading a conversation that has been really sparked by just this national conversation, and we wanted to bring it locally and really spark a citywide conversation about what we can do collectively. And as Dr. Nesbitt said, you know, any one sector can't resolve these longstanding disparities. And so really at the summit, what you can expect is having parents, fathers — we don't want to exclude fathers — mothers and fathers who are expecting and have children now. We're also expecting a lot of stakeholders and practitioners who are either hospital administrators or home visiting staff or case managers who are really in the space of delivering services. And so really we're going to have an opportunity to hear from national experts around best practices. Dr. Nesbitt is going to also feature some local partners that have really done some fantastic work in areas where we still need to improve. And we want to spur those conversations and then really pivot to concrete steps and actions that we can take as a city.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking with D.C. Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services, Hyseok Chung, and also Dr. Laquandra Nesbitt. She is D.C.'s Health Director. We're talking about the health of expectant mothers and babies. What are the issues and how can these issues be addressed in the District of Columbia? One of the things that is happening, you have mayors from six cities, all of these cities: Flint, Michigan; Rochester, Baltimore, Maryland; Chicago, Charlotte, North Carolina; New Haven, Connecticut; Gary, Indiana. These are majority-minority cities. Is this an issue that is impacting black women and black children more than white women and white children?
The answer to that, unfortunately, is yes.
Why is that?
There's a number of factors that lead to that. There's three things that I've outlined that are part of our agenda in terms of our next steps. The first being, we want to make sure that women are healthier before they become pregnant. The second one is we want to make sure that women who, once they become pregnant, that they enter into prenatal care in the first trimester in order to improve the birth outcomes for their child and to improve their overall maternal outcomes. And the third one is to reduce the likelihood of preterm births. Now, when we look at those three things that I just mentioned, the chronic health conditions tend to be higher in African Americans. And there's a number of reasons why that occurs. You tend to see high blood pressure, diabetes being higher in blacks than you do in non-blacks. And that even occurs in women of reproductive age. In the District of Columbia in particular, and in some other cities, even with our high insurance rates, only 50% of black women are entering prenatal care in the first trimester compared to 80 to 90% of whites. And then we also see that the risk of preterm birth is higher in black women. And the causes beyond that are still under investigation. So there's a lot of research that is looking into why that happens. There's these concepts called weathering, the weathering hypothesis, structural racism, how that plays a
factor.
What
is weathering?
So in a nutshell, so I won't get into and the deeper context of that, is how toxic stress and the toxic stress that African Americans or blacks are under in certain communities where structural racism exists, and the impact of certain levels of hormones being present in your body, how that impacts your overall health over time. So in a nutshell, that's what the concept of weathering is.
Let me stop you real quick. I want to grab a quick phone call before my break. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Clyde, quickly, what's on your mind? Go ahead, Clyde. Go right ahead.
Yeah, so basically, you know, I agree with what's being said and all, but I think the real issue is that there's too much low quality food, and we don't know, you know, where it's coming from and stuff like that. Not enough people are exercising in the city, referring to women. And when it comes to, you know, giving birth, I don't really think it's enough women in this area that really, you know, kind of really give themselves an opportunity to get themselves better in shape and to be able to birth their children in a way to where they can come out, you know, healthy and without any issues.
Well, Clyde, let me stop you there and try to have Dr. Nesbitt quickly answer that. I've got about a minute before the break, Dr. Nesbitt. Your thoughts about the overall, even pre-pregnancy health of women, because so, I think that's what he was referring to.
So pre-pregnancy health is extremely important. So again, we go back to the three things that we want to make sure that we focus on that we believe will impact the overall maternal and infant health or perinatal health in our community. And one of those things is healthy women have healthy babies. And so focusing on pre-pregnancy health and making sure that women can be at their best and optimal health prior to conception and prior to pregnancy will improve birth outcomes and pregnancy outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I need to take a break, but before we do, I want to let our listeners know. Ms. Coates calling from D.C., you're next. Karen calling from D.C., you're also next. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about the health of expectant mothers in the district and newborns. The summit, the Maternal and Infant Health Summit, is 1 week from today, September 12th, from 9 a.m. to 3 o'clock. It's open to the public at the Washington Convention Center. You want to be there. If you have a newborn, if you're pregnant, if you're thinking about getting pregnant, or if you're just somebody in the community who cares, they want to see you there. Give us a call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stay with us. You will be able to hear the program. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. More of this conversation in just a few seconds.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.2, student-run WHBC, HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU, and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Next week, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser is convening a summit to address the issues related to healthy expectant mothers and babies. Tonight, we're talking about it with Isook Chung. She is the D.C. Deputy Mayor for Health and Human Services, and Dr. LaQuandra Nesbitt, D.C. Health Director. Lines are open if you have a question about maternal mortality, as well as infant mortality. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ms. Coates, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Okay, good evening. Good evening, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, I want to say these young ladies are having these babies. They stay up all night. I mean, I know this for a fact. They stay up all night. They're putting things in their bodies, and they know they're pregnant. They shouldn't be doing those things. And the babies are being born underweight. And then when you go to the hospital and see them, they got tubes and things running all in them. The mothers need to be educated. They need to have jobs. They need to have A1 food.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Coates, I think you make an excellent point. So let's talk about that, because I think that Ms. Coates makes the critical point. The thing that struck me about what she just said was education. Mm-hmm. There needs to be a wholesale education of of everyone, I think, in the District of Columbia, no matter where they happen to live.
No, absolutely. And as I have been working with Dr. Nesbitt and just talking to different moms throughout the city, I've been really struck with how critically important it is to get the right level of education, and that we can't actually have biases that, whether it's income or by race, that we know everything about how to be or how to be healthy during pregnancy or what to do during pregnancy. I was sharing my own personal story that as educated as I am, as well-resourced as I am, I was actually writing policies around parenting, and I had one of the most difficult and challenging pregnancy stories ever. And I was just sharing with this new and expecting mom how, you know, I was doing what was told. I didn't actually know a lot about being pregnant and how and what to do and where to go. And this is the type of information we're trying to convey to our new and expecting moms and fathers. And so really, I want to convey what you said earlier, which is this summit is really not only a time where we're going to have an opportunity as a city to talk about the big things that we want to strive for in terms of programs and policies, but really we want to get the resources out there to families. We're going to have a resource opportunity. We're going to have a whole room with resources for parents, and kind of a quasi-resource fair, and we want to make sure that parents and expecting parents can walk away with the information they need.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Karen calling from D.C. Thanks for hanging on, Karen. What's on your mind?
What's on my mind, good evening, is immunization shots that dummy down our children. A lot of parents choose to homeschool their children, therefore, so they don't have to go through the system of the immunizations and the mercury and whatever else is in these mandatory immunization shots. And we have to make an informed decision based on what's out there. A lot of stuff that we need to understand, and a lot of folk, government's not going to tell us the truth about what's best for our children. So a lot of our children wind up on or having ADHD and on these medications due to these immunizations. And I'm a grandparent. My dog grandbaby is a toddler. So I'm concerned in reference to the decisions I'm informing my daughter to make.
Well, let me, Karen, stop you there, because you said quite a bit, and I'm glad Dr. Nesbitt is here, because, you know, obviously this is a kind of a long-standing conversation regarding immunizations. Even, you know, very recently we've seen kind of an outbreak of measles because people are not getting immunizations, but I'll let the doctor talk about it, because the doctor is in. Dr. Nesbitt.
Thank you so much for that opportunity. I think it's extremely important that we dispel myths when we can. There is no connection at all between mercury and diagnosis of mental health or emotional or intellectual disabilities or disturbances in children. And it is extremely important that we do not discourage our parents and our children from vaccinating themselves from vaccine preventable illnesses that are making a return in our communities and causing harm to children, that can cause things like blindness and developmental disabilities if you contract these infections that can be prevented from vaccines. So I do want to make sure and be very clear that there is no connection with mercury and causing developmental disabilities. There is also not a connection between vaccines and ADHD or autism. And so it is extremely important that we do arm, I agree, the community with facts. And the facts are very clear that there is no connection between vaccines, autism, and ADHD. So I want to make sure that my position on that is extremely clear with our community. The other thing that I think is extremely important for people to know, why we encourage vaccines and why we require vaccines for entry into school, is that we do have children who have certain health conditions where they themselves cannot be vaccinated. And when those children enter into a school environment where they can be put at risk for getting things like measles and mumps and varicella, it could be life-threatening for them. Mm-hmm. And so we need to take that into consideration when we are making decisions not to vaccinate children, to violate laws that are designed to protect our children, especially those children who are immunocompromised and are have the right to attend a school environment that is free of infectious diseases and things of that nature. So I want to make sure my position on that is very clear. And I do encourage people to learn information, to speak with their healthcare provider. But we've got to make sure that people do have the facts on this matter.
Which brings me to this other point before I let you go, Karen and Isook. I'm sure you can put a fine point on that. This is exactly her concerns are exactly the kinds of concerns and questions mm-hmm. that need to be raised at the summit. Mm-hmm. And I think if you have a big crowd. Mm-hmm. of people that are attending. Mm-hmm. You have obviously experts such as yourself, experts as such as Dr. Mm-hmm. Nesbitt, who can deal with conspiracy theories and all of these other issues mm-hmm. because this isn't just, you know, I heard.
That's right.
Or somebody told me. As Dr. Nesbitt said, this can be life or death, not only your child, but for the children that your child may come in contact with day to day in school, church, wherever.
That's right. And I want to echo Dr. Nesbitt's point that, you know, this is, we need to make sure that all residents get all the information and talk to the right experts to get that level setting. And again, you know, we're not in the business of myth busting, but we care so deeply about the health and well-being of our residents that we need to make sure that the right information gets to all of our residents. And so especially immunization has been hot topic. And as a parent of two, I'm very diligent about getting immunizations because I care about their well-being and health.
Yeah. Karen, thank you so much for bringing up that issue for discussion. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Stanley, calling from Northern Virginia. Thanks for calling, Stanley. What's on your mind?
Yes, and thank you guys for having this discussion. It's
sure.
so important. The World Health Organization, to the last caller's point, and to Dr. Nesbitt's point, says that medication and immunization tracking is the number one, the lack of immunization is the number one cause of death worldwide. So the importance of Dr. Nesbitt's comment is unsurmountable. We have to bust that myth. So my call was in reference to the maternal mortality and infant morbidity associated with the high growth in not just in Washington but in the region. Due to opioid addiction. Those moms who are either in the system or not in the system and who are subject to opioid, even if they're in an opioid program. And then the secondary element associated with if they don't survive, the long-term impact on their children. I understand that Dr. Cynthia Macri, former military OBGYN oncologist has actually brought that to the attention, not just locally but regionally. And I wanted to see and hear both doctors' comments on that subject, and to see if that was a part of the summit.
Okay, sure. I'll start with Dr. Nesbitt, whether it's opioid or any other. Mm-hmm. Illicit drug activity.
So one of the things that we encourage you all to do is to take a look at the website that we have for the summit, which is dcmaternalhealth.com, and the full agenda for the summit is posted there. We have a number of local experts as well as national experts, and some of our local experts have extensive experience around the country that they'll be bringing and presenting on the day next Wednesday. I will speak a little bit more specifically philosophically in terms of what we are seeing in Washington, D.C., and then talking about some of the discussions that we have with my colleagues in the region. Interestingly, in Washington, D.C., when we talk about opioid and opioid-related morbidity and mortality, so individuals who have substance use disorder or opioid use disorder, who don't have fatal overdose, but who have the disorder, tends to be predominantly in males, older African-American males. So we don't see the phenomenon of women of reproductive age experiencing opioid use disorder at higher rates or in increasing rates, which is a different phenomenon than what you may even see in our neighboring states in Maryland and Virginia. And the reason why I'm highlighting this is when you ask the question specifically about maternal mortality or infant mortality, what we tend to look for as a marker is something called neonatal abstinence syndrome. And so that's what we've been tracking in Washington, D.C., what you tend to track in the state of Maryland and in all of your hospitals. And so we have been tracking that. We have started to see a little bit of an increase, but not what we would consider to be a significant increase based on the overall increase of opioid-related overdoses and opioid-related fatalities that have been seen in neighboring Maryland and Virginia. So for us, when we talk about other substances of abuse, such as cocaine and PCP and marijuana, I know when we talk about marijuana in the district, it has a little bit of a different connotation, but those are to what the traditional substances of abuse are. Those still tend to rank higher in women of reproductive age than opioids. So, again, we are monitoring for neonatal abstinence syndrome, which is something that we look for. We are looking and observing for increasing trends and the impact that that has on infants and moms, but we aren't seeing the increases in the same way that has been seen across the country and even in our neighboring states.
All right, so do you want to add to that?
No, I just want to echo, and the city is closely monitoring, as Dr. Nesbitt said, and we have the Department of Behavioral Health also leading and co-leading with the Department of Health around the Opioid Summit or Opioid Strategic Task Force that really is looking to make sure that we're on the in the kind of ahead of the curve, if you will, so that we are, if there is anything, that we will be right on top of everything.
And I do want to add to that that, you know, I've had some discussions throughout the day, is when we talk about behavioral health and maternal health, we look at it from both perspectives. So in our programs and our partnerships that we fund on the D.C. health side, when a woman is pregnant, we do screenings for behavioral health. Similarly, on the behavioral health side, when a woman seeks services for behavioral health services, whether it's through the Access Helpline, they screen and ask questions about pregnancy and whether or not that there's young children in the home. So we are doing a very integrative approach, and we're looking at looking to be able to address those factors and those issues, whether you come in on the medical care side or whether you come in on the behavioral health side.
Stanley, thank you so much for your question. We need to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. To the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about the Maternal and Infant Health Summit happening in the District of Columbia next Wednesday at the Washington Convention Center. It's open to the public. It's free. It starts at 9 a.m. Just about anything that you need to know about the health of expectant mothers, newborns, and those who perhaps are thinking about getting pregnant. Definitely something that you want to pay attention to. I do have a question, you know, Dr. Nesbitt, and also, you know, Heisok, these are the things that are, for this particular community, that remain a cloud, access to the best care. We still don't have a neonatal center in a hospital east of the river. We are still struggling with that. These issues, the overall issues predate the Bowser administration. There has as a native, okay, as a native, this has been been an issue since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And so what is the new strategy for, you know, for addressing that, to address, you know, the hospital issue?
Well, before we address the hospital issue, I want to echo, and this is important because I don't want to lose sight of any one thing in terms of you and I have been talking about the health disparities for quite a long time, and you know that there's no kind of magic bullet or easy fix. But I want to echo what Dr. Nesbitt said earlier, which is that for us, you know, health disparities, it has to be tackled very comprehensively. So when we think about a family, when we think about a youth or a child, that, you know, we're not just focused on their health well-being or health outcomes, but we're equally focused on the right education, housing, transportation, and that we look at the family unit so that we really focus on all the things they need in terms of resources. So as you know, we've reformed TANF quite a bit so that we really focus on the needs of the entire family. So recognizing that without housing, you know, they're continually going to struggle, right? And when we don't have the quality education or access to the education they need, that we're going to continue to see struggles in other aspects. So we are going to look at this very holistically. So education, access, quality, very, very much top of mind for us as an administration. As you know, we just announced a partnership with GW, really focused on the whole healthcare delivery system east of the river. You know, what we don't want to do is create a hospital that's not utilized like we've done in the past. We really want to think of this more comprehensively, think about the specialty care needed, think about the need for our residents across the city, but in particular 7 and 8, to really get situated in a medical home. Awareness about the need of being in long-term health care.
Yeah, let's be honest. Yes. About it. Babies come when they come. We know that.
Yes.
When, you know, they don't, you know, they don't make appointments. They don't call you. When they come, they come. If you are living east of the river in wards, in ward 7 or 8, if you have to drive to GW, if you have to drive to Howard University, mm-hmm. chances are, you know, the baby's not calling an Uber. That the child comes when it comes, and the quicker it can get to a facility that is capable, mm-hmm. and that is modern, the more likely it is that the birth will be healthy, that the mother will be healthy.
Now, I completely agree with you that the baby comes when it's going to come, but I also, you know, I'm going to annotate that a little bit and say, but they don't come like they come on TV, right? You know, having managed labor.
Well, I would disagree with that too, because there are a whole lot of cops and some other folks who have had some deliveries.
I wanted an animated, but
average birth experience is not what we call a precipitous labor that comes with very little warning
The sooner they get to a hospital,
correct,
the better.
I absolutely agree with you. So, you know, I would approach it from the perspective, you know, I'm not a native Washingtonian, but I'm going to take my boss, the mayor's mantra, said whether you've been here 5 minutes or five generations, you live in Washington, you're a Washingtonian. So I've been in and out of health policy in D.C. for about 10 years now. I'm nearing my 10 year anniversary in a couple of months. And I agree with the deputy mayor that we are taking a comprehensive approach to answer your question. And about 10 years ago, the district did some very interesting and innovative things that should be applauded with its tobacco settlement funds. And with those tobacco settlement funds, the district made investments in primary care facilities across the district, in particular making those investments in wards 5, 7, and 8. In healthcare facilities that led to a modernization of our primary care system. And this upgraded or improved the built built the Capitol facades and the infrastructure of many federal qualified health centers to increase their capacity, their ability to see more patients throughout the district. And these are some of the, I would put these healthcare facilities up against any healthcare facility in the district in terms of their modernization, the services that they offer. Some of them even offer mammography. Okay, so they, and not just mammography, but breast health services comprehensively in terms of navigating you to what you would need if you had an abnormal mammogram. And these services, as we continue to track them, as they have been implemented over a 10-year period of time, including women's health services and prenatal care, so equitably distributed across the District of Columbia, which is where most prenatal care and birth and maternal health services occur in the outpatient setting, not in a hospital. That's the important thing to remember. Has improved drastically over a 10-year period.
I'm talking about birth.
Let me get to your birth. It's time to push.
Okay.
Right? So how all of this is connected is that what is critically important is when a woman enters into prenatal care, the relationship that she has with her healthcare provider dictates where that woman is going to deliver her baby. So if as the healthcare provider, I say, we are not going to facility X, we are going to facility Y, helps to determine where, when it is time to push, when I feel that first contraction, I'm not going to the hospital that is in the geographically close to where I live in Ward 7 or 8. I'm going to go somewhere else. So for at least 10 years, 90% of the women who were pregnant in Ward 7 and 8 did not use the hospital that was located in Ward 8.
So it sounds to me like you're making an argument that the folks in 7 and 8 don't need a facility.
I'm not making that argument.
Okay,
the thing that I'm making very clear is for at least 10 years, the prenatal care relationships that they developed did not drive them to the birthing facility that was in their ward.
But don't they deserve to have one? Let me finish.
Okay, go ahead. And so what happened was over periods of time, the trust that was in that facility eroded. And so if the healthcare providers themselves won't use that facility, won't direct the women to that facility, you can't make people use a facility that the healthcare providers won't use. So as we build the new hospital, it has to be done in a way where there is trust, where the perceptions of quality are there, and where that hospital has a brand that is going to actually have the women in that community, the 3,000 to 4,000 women a year who are pregnant, are going to use that healthcare facility. And until that happens, simply having a facility in the community is not the answer. It must be a facility that women are willing to use. So when women were choosing, either on their own or through the relationships they had with their prenatal care providers, to not go to the facility that was there, there's nothing that can be done to overcome
so,
that.
So, and with that said, and I think that last part is an excellent argument. So how do you build a hospital, a brand in the community that they trust, that they believe in?
That is what the partnership with GW has given
us.
And how we know that that will work is that when we look at where the women in Ward 7 and 8 go to, It is that type of hospital. They are delivering at GW. So it's one of the hospitals, you know, when we looked for a partnership opportunity for the new hospital, where are women going? Who is a partner that they trust from Ward 7 and 8? And GW was on that list.
That's right. And to Dr. Nesbitt's point, and this new system of care in east of the river will definitely have an OB unit. So just, you know, please don't walk away thinking that we're not prioritizing this. In fact, we will.
Not just because of the summit next week, but this has been, as I said, no matter how you feel about the outcome of things during, during this administration, the previous administration, the administration before that, in the administration before that, going, I would argue all the way back to Marion Barry as mayor, these have been priority mountains that have been difficult to climb.
We want to be different, right? Mm-hmm. And just like you said yourself, building a hospital will not bring the consumers and residents to that a structure. What we have to do is make sure that we're changing the expectation that they deserve, that the quality is placed within their communities, right? And so we're going to do this thoughtfully. We're going to do this strategically. We're going to do it comprehensively. And Dr. Nesbitt is absolutely right. We're not just building something new, but we're going to change the expectation and change the behavior of residents in 7 and 8 so that they can expect the very best east of the river.
Another education component. Also, it sounds like I'm out of time.
Oh, boy.
But I wish I do, in this particular case, wish I had more. But I do want to thank both of you, Dr. LaQuandra Nesbitt and Hyesuk Chung, for coming in and chatting with us. And don't forget, of course, the Maternal and Infant Health Summit. It is 1 week from today, 9 to 3, at the Washington Convention Center. It's open to the public. Pregnant moms, expectant moms, new moms. Oh, and how about this? Dads, you need to go too. Something to think about. That is the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, September 5th. I'm Harold Fisher. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.